ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 63 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 26th of November, 2021. I'm Conal O'Moran, here today to bring you an hour of positivity. Yes, have you noticed that the evenings are starting around lunchtime? COVID is still wreaking havoc, and businesses still can have no real visibility of what Christmas or the New Year, usually a time of big spending, may look like. With that in mind, Team GBS has decided to lift the gloom, bring you back to balmy summer days, tell you how brilliant your business can be in 2022. We're bringing you 100 reasons to be cheerful, and that in a second. Also, Dr. Lolly, no, that's a real name, will explain the female entrepreneur mindset. And if you are that female entrepreneur or no one, then the Enterprise Ireland-backed Going for Growth program is a must-do. We have the Going for Growth boss joining us to tell us the best tips and hacks if you want to apply. But do hurry, applications close real soon. And whether you're getting away for a couple of days or spending quality time with the Rellies, you'll be carrying your wash bag with you. Make sure to dump the old shaving foam and replace it with a nail varnished size bottle of DeFacto shaving oil. It's all natural, totally recyclable, and small enough to get you through airport security, no bother at all. It's also an ideal and inexpensive gift from a child to an adult. Get it now online, DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show.
Now, business owners, by their nature, always have to believe that tomorrow will be better, because if we didn't, when business gets super tough, we would throw in the towel, and we don't. So that makes business owners optimists by their very nature. Good news, so, that my first guest, Mark Henry, has just written a book called, In Fact, An Optimist's Guide to Ireland, because this book is for them. As well as being an author, Mark is also Central Marketing Director with Tourism Ireland, and he's also nuts for stats, and we all know the numbers don't lie. Mark has analysed what's been going on since the foundation of the Irish state, almost 100 years ago. And do you know what? Despite what's written weekly by the same Irish Times columnists, things are going not too badly at all here. Mark Henry, welcome to That Great Business Show, home of the optimists.
I've come to the right place. So,
of course you have.
We have a great message to share. I tell you, the story of Ireland is a remarkable one that can only but inspire when you understand it.
That's because you read the stats. And the stats have four. With 100 years is four generations. For four generations, despite ourselves, we haven't been doing too badly.
No, exactly. In fact, next year, as you say, 2022, it's the 100th anniversary, right, of Ireland. It's our big birthday. So look, a good time to reflect, good time to look back and see, well, what have we achieved?
And a clever time to get this book out. Well
exactly.
done.
Exactly. 100 remarkable achievements for 100 years. That was the ambition. Started with a list of more than 200, but we got it down to 100 because, listen, there's no shortage of good things to say. I mean, we are obviously living longer. We are obviously living healthier. We are earning more. We are open to the world to a much greater extent than everybody. Before, personal freedoms are greater than ever.
One
the lives
happened.
Of women and children have been transformed. Overall, it's been a remarkable journey. I mean, Ireland is now second best place to live in the world, according to the United Nations. Our quality of life here is second only to Norway. And why do they say that? They say that because our incomes are so high. They say that because our education levels are so high. And they say it because our longevity and our health is, in fact, incredibly strong. So, in fact, there is a huge amount to celebrate. And that's what this book is all about.
And the sneaky Norwegians, the reason they're so happy is because they found oil when you were allowed to have oil. And they used it and they built up one hell of a pension pot.
Exactly. And think about that. You know, so we're up there with them. And you know, that's amazing. You know, I mean... People say, oh, you know, with the leaders of 1916, be happy with where we are today. Yes, yes, they'd be thrilled because, in fact, we're ahead of Britain on most things, and I think we keep them happy in the first instance. But, you know, absolutely, it doesn't mean everything's perfect. But it absolutely, we've come a really long way. I mean, think of the poverty of your school textbooks, the 1920s, you know, with kids running around Dublin barefoot in the tenements.
I wasn't there in the 1920s, not my ones.
Well, maybe the 1950s. No, maybe not either. But again, the waves of emigration, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, near up to close to half of those in their 20s left in the 50s. Okay, maybe the 70s then, you know, when we had prices doubling and then doubling again in a decade, you know, in terms of inflation. And of course, the unemployment at the time. And then the transformation, because yes, let's face it, there wasn't a huge amount of improvement in the first 50 years. Really, it's been the last 50. But you know, we have absolutely reached a point where by any measure that you can quantify, we have, yes, some challenges, but we really are amongst the world leaders on anything that matters.
One thing that is not in your book, because you told me, because you took it out because of what's happening with the figure, and I find this really interesting, we're no longer a nation of begrudgers.
Well, we're less and less so. I mean, I did look to see, is begrudgery a thing? And it's only a thing in Ireland. It doesn't really get much of a mention anywhere else. But according to Google, it's on the way down, which I think makes sense. We've less and less to begrudge, frankly.
Hang on a second. There is begrudgery elsewhere, because there's a German word for it, which is Schadenfreude. And there are, I'm sure, many other words in other languages. You may not find begrudgery or whatever. But there is, of course, people always want to have a go at their neighbours or look down at their neighbours, whatever.
Yeah. I think there's two dynamics in Ireland. I think one is, you know, and again, in EU surveys, when they ask people in Ireland, you know, compared to 30 years ago, do you think there's more equality of opportunity for you? And 80% of Irish people say yes. And that puts us number one in Europe. So people in Ireland, we realise the improvement. We do actually, when we stop to pause and think about it, we actually recognise that in our lifetimes, things have improved measurably. But secondly, yeah, you know, I mean, we find that a little bit hard to accept. And people kind of do feel a little hard to appreciate the progress because the negative news cycle is around us. And because, frankly, that is a bit of a human trait. We do like to lean towards the negative. It was the ancestor who survived the lion in the jungle, you know, who looked out for danger, who lived to tell the tale. So we do have a negativity bias. There was a study I talk about in the book that was done in Canada, McGill University, and they sat people down and said, look, it's an eye tracking study. Have a look there. We're just going to, you know, at that computer while we just calibrate the camera. There wasn't any eye tracking thing at all, but it was really to see what were the news articles in front of them that was perfectly balanced between positive and negative. What would people tend towards? You guessed it. They went towards the negative, and the more interested they were in news, the more they went towards the negative. So it's a natural tendency. Problem is, in a 24-hour place we live today with the news always in our pocket and 24-hour news coverage on TV, we can't get away from it. It leads us to believe things are getting worse, and they're not. They're not getting worse.
You have a very good background in psychology. Is there something odd about the Irish person? And I'm looking at, I've been watching Irish business for a long time now. There has been an absolute fundamental shift. I remember when I used to scratch on a Friday evening when I was working in RTE, trying to find not any good or bad, just any business story. Nowadays, you find them every day, every week. We fill a podcast with it every week. I mean, endless, absolutely endless. We have gone nuts for business in the best sense.
We have. And, you know, again, you look back over the first century, you know, for the first 60 years, there were basically a million people employed in Ireland. Didn't grow an iota. And that's why people immigrated. There were, you know, if you had a job, you held it for life, for goodness sake. There wasn't another one coming up until someone died. You know, it was bad. And of course, then, yeah, the Celtic Tiger saw the transformation of that. And within 12 years, we went from 1 million to 2 million people
in employment. Which is enormous.
Enormous change. And more, okay, yeah, we lost some in the recession, but by 2019, we were back to record levels, just approaching 2.3 million immediately before COVID. So, you know, absolutely, we've undergone a transformation. And part of what's changed is not the number of jobs, it's also the type of jobs they are. Because again, if you look back to the 80s, the greatest category of jobs were in low skilled, as in the numbers who were high proportion who were high skilled jobs was the smallest. Nowadays, it's completely reversed. Nearly half of all jobs these days can be classified as high skilled. So again, the type of employment has transformed, and that has powered business, and it's powered Irish business. This isn't all multinationals. Yes, undoubtedly, the multinationals have been very, very positive for us in helping create employment, but the spin-offs are absolutely massive. And in fact, again, you look at things in the book, I talk about how productivity stats. So yeah, Ireland is the number one most productive nation per employee if you include multinationals, you strip out multinationals, okay, we're the fifth biggest in Europe out of 27 countries. Wait a minute, that's great. That's not bad news. That's brilliant. Indigenous companies in Ireland are the fifth most productive in all of Europe.
You know, that great photograph of Mrs. Merkel thinks we're at work. That kind of told me a story is we're proud of what we do. And of course, we take time out. And yeah, we give it the welly, but we love it. So of all of the stats, and you said that you went through many, that you have gone through, tell me maybe two, three, four or five that just said, oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. Now, I'm such a believer in all of this because I do believe we're not bad at what we do.
You know, I, at this point, that we're the second best quality of life country in the world, according to the UN. I think most people don't know that. But in fact, we have
It's grown. The weather. We got the weather. It's just the weather.
Yeah, encourage us to stay indoors and keep at it. But I suppose the point is we've grown 22 places since they started measuring this in 1990. So that is the highest growth of any developed nation. So we have come on more than any developed nation since 1990. I mean, that is extraordinary. You know, again, depends how far you want to go back. But again, if you go back to 1922, I mean, again, people say, oh, you know, life was much simpler. Oh, give us a break. I mean, people at that time lived an average of 57 years. That was the average, 57. We've added a whole generation in 100
now,
years.
I'm going to pick you up on this one because this is an area of great interest to me. The real reason that that number is so low is not that people didn't live up to 80 or 90. It was childbirth, wasn't it? And if you go back another generation or two, it was even worse. And that's what brought that down. People did live a great old age.
There were, I would say there were a range of things happened, right? So you're absolutely correct that in the 30s, 40s, 50s, the biggest improvements were due to, in particular, stopping children dying their first year. You know, back, as you say, in the 20s, just short of 1 in 10 children would die before their first birthday.
Crazy, isn't it?
We have effectively eliminated that. As you say, maternal births were significant as well. Again, just short of 1% now of women giving birth back then would have died in the process. Again, we've effectively eliminated that. But that was some of the early progress that we made. Then in particular, if you go into the 80s, a huge amount of men were still dying at 60. There were still a huge issue with cardiac problems. Our diets weren't great. Exercise wasn't great. And again, we began to tackle that. And that absolutely reduced male death rates and began to see male life extension then as the previous work in maternal deaths had improved female lifespan. Then things like our reduction in smoking. So again, that saw cancer rates improve significantly in the 80s and 90s. So there's actually been a series and a sequence of things. It's not any one thing, but collectively that has both, as you say, meant that the young ones have lived to see adulthood, but also that the older ones, and particularly men, have benefited a lot from improvements in medicine over the last 30 years.
And here's one for you that is in your book. The amount that we drink has actually gone down.
An industry body went out to say, oh, you know, there's a flood of alcohol into the homes during lockdown. But you actually looked at the numbers. And of course, people drink at home because they can't drink in a pub. But when you look at the amount of alcohol they were consuming, it is, again, dropping, as the trend has been. And again, as I say, it's at its lowest level it has been in 30 years. And that has had all sorts of health benefits.
I have read many letters in the Irish Times that would contradict what you say. I'm not picking on the Irish Times, but I am picking on the Irish Times because it's meant to reflect accuracy.
Well, you know, I think overall, this is why I've written the book, is to give people context. Of course, it's not true of everybody. Of course, it's not true of every community, every place. Of course, it isn't. Of course, we don't not have challenges. Of course, we do. But when you step back, when you look at the long term, when you turn your eye equally to the positive and negative, then it's a very different picture. Again, I talk about some of the research, again, the book. Generally speaking, human beings find it difficult to compare anything that's more than 5 years ago. It's very hard to compare life to what it was like 10 years ago. There's some research that was done in the States, in California and in MIT. They looked at tweets about the weather in America. And people say, oh, it's really hot today, or it's really cold. And people could compare the last 5 years, but beyond that, things that would have been extraordinary, they just don't comment on at all because the brain isn't built for that. I know, until the modern era, people didn't live to be beyond 35. So, you know, they didn't need to and nothing changed.
No, that is untrue about living until
average,
after 35.
Average. Oh, there's statistics, average.
The one I remember about the weather, which anybody who wore a duffel coat, did you wear as a kid a duffel coat?
Of course, yes.
Did you get it wet?
Yes.
Did you go to school in a wet duffel coat?
Absolutely.
Do you remember the smell? That's all you need to know. We've come a long way, baby. Now, you have done the analysis for me. We are a business show. And what you're not expecting is me to ask you this question, but you don't seem to mind. He's shrugging. What businesses would you go into based on what you've been analysing, looking forward? Just 2, 3, 4 ideas for business, because we love to pick people's brains.
Well, you know, one of the things that, again, Irish indigenous business is actually a leader on in all of Europe is selling online. Believe it or not, we have more businesses, 36% according to the EU, that are capable of selling online. That's actually the highest of any country in Europe. To me, that there's a whole lot of potential around that. I mean, the internet thing isn't over. It's only just beginning.
I'm going to just stop you for a second there, because you told me a story, because you were a member of the Irish Internet Association, and you had done, is it 20 years ago you did research, or is it further back?
Yes. I was a board member, exactly. We started doing some research on, about 20 years ago, this internet thing seems to be very interesting. Let's ask businesses about it. And we asked people a whole range of things, one of which was, what search engines are you using? We had a list, Yahoo.
They probably said search engine, what's that?
Ask Jeeves, remember that?
I do remember
all
that,
these
yeah.
ones. And we had a list, we got our answers, and there was a little open in the box, was there any others? A couple of people started injecting, there's this one you've missed called Google. It wasn't even a thing. The start of the internet, what? But, this is just my point, right? We're only in the mid, or we're not even in the middle, it's still the beginning of this journey. The transformation of Irish businesses in terms of digital is obviously only going to be accelerated by everything that's happened in the recent past. That journey is offers huge opportunities for everyone at every step of that journey, from businesses themselves and to transform online, from all the services that can be built around those and that flow from that and that, serve that. And of course, as we go back to full employment, and the central bank says we're going to be back to full employment in 2 years' time, automation is going to be a huge thing. We can see it all around us. It's not just truck drivers. You can't get people left, right and center, So, of course, education is also going to flow from that. Automation and education, two clear trends that are going to get a huge whack of investment in the next while to try to reorient economies to cope with the new reality. So I think there's huge opportunities in both of those. And sure, we keep going. There's a lot that flows
please
from
do,
all of that.
Please do. But because one of the ones I want to pick up on, because you do actually work with Tourism Ireland, and you must know an awful lot about what is coming down the tracks in tourism. If you were thinking of a tourist business stroke project, which ones, plural, would you choose?
Yeah, tourism is actually, and I talk about in the book, is been a huge positive transformation. Obviously, our growth in inbound tourism, it actually has been really, really stunning. I mean, we're actually amongst the top 10 countries in the world. If you look at number of tourists per capita, we're really strong. But also outbound, if you actually go back to the early 90s, 1 in 5 people were holidaying overseas. 1 in 5. And within 15 years, thanks to the Celtic Tiger and Ryanair, we got to the point where everybody in Ireland was taking a holiday on average. So, of course, some were taking 2 or 3, some weren't taking any. But the point is, we've now reached a point just before COVID where we're taking 1.2 on average. So, on average, we're taking more holidays than there are people in the island of Ireland. So, the point is, this is a growth business. I mean, people say, oh my goodness, has this COVID thing wiped out tourism? No way, because it's a whole, absolutely leisure is with us forevermore. We can see how people are looking for more and more leisure time. People's incomes are going up. The opportunities in tourism are absolutely coming back and are going to come back fairly quickly. Now, what are those opportunities that, you're asking me? I think, it predated COVID, but I absolutely can see that shift towards sustainable tourism is absolutely central to everybody's thinking. God knows we're an island and people in the main fly here. So that is a challenge for us in particular. And it's not that yet that people are avoiding flights, not seriously, but they want to know they're making a contribution in some way to the place and that they're doing good when they get here and at least not doing harm. So there is a role there for everybody, to create new products, but B, to retrofit and affect the product that they've got to make it more sustainable, because I absolutely can see that coming like a wave and COVID has only enhanced that. It also, as you can see, has pushed people outdoors in record numbers. And I think we can anticipate more of that. The investment that's going in now to greenways and indeed blueways really offers huge potential for businesses. Anyone who's lucky enough to have a cafe somewhere along a route of a greenway can absolutely testify to the business transformational impact of that. There's a lot more of that coming. Government money's flooding into it. So there's plenty of opportunities there.
And you obviously saw an opportunity to make some money out of writing a book about lists.
Oh, I don't know about making any money out of this. But if I can evangelize, then I'm happy.
I've just opened up a window there for you to shout about the book. It's published by Gill.
Yeah, you can get it absolutely everywhere. You know, if literally every bookstore anywhere in Ireland has got a copy at the moment. It's called In Fact, An Optimist's Guide to Ireland. And, you know, I mean, it is time to just put the context, give the balance, use the opportunity to just step back and look at what we've achieved as a nation. Actually, it's really remarkable. Actually, we have a great story to tell, no matter how you look at it on an international basis. Of course, there's a chapter there on the challenges that face us into as we go into our second century.
But even those, that's one of them is housing. But yes. What people have forgotten is we need 35,000 houses. We were building, I think, is it 80 or 90,000 at one stage. It's absolutely possible. Just give us the workers, give us the land, give us the cash. And, well, that's the easy part, isn't it?
Yeah. I do think it's an important one. I call it out, of course. I mean, it is a big challenge. I mean, in one sense, it's an obvious one. But the point, the challenge I see with it is that, and I talk in the book about the four factors that account for our unsuccess. And one of them is our sense of community. You know, we have a strong sense of equality and fairness as a society. We have high levels of trust. It hasn't been, you know, Ireland has actually become more equal in the last 20 years. Income inequality has decreased, not more unequal. And the challenge around housing is if we don't fix that, there might be a generation start saying, well, wait a minute, there's a them and us. And that isn't helpful for our continued growth.
Your final question, because we ask this of all our guests, who would Mark Henry, who is author of In Fact, An Optimist's Guide to Ireland. See the way I got that in there for you again?
Thank you.
Published by Gill. How much is it?
Oh, well, you can get it for anything from 20 if you get it right now, up to 25 retail.
Well, we'll go 20. So 20 euro. It's a bargain. It is what everybody in business should be given to remind them that things ain't so bad. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Well, I think I'm chairman of the board. How about that? I'll get Bob Geldof in because I think, honestly, he has seen a huge...
Chairman of the board is not Bob Geldof. Chairman of the board is the runner, our past world record runner.
Ronnie Delaney?
No, God, Ronnie Delaney is brilliant. I've met with him. No, Eamon Coughlin, he was chairman. Yes. Well, he was chairman of the boards.
Yes. No, I'm picking Bob Geldof because, I mean, obviously, he is actually an astute businessman. That's where he made his money, not from music. And he absolutely speaks a lot of sense. You know, there's a bit of Michael O'Leary in him before Michael O'Leary came along. And, you know, who knows? He might even change your world. So Bob's my hero.
Okay, well, we'll give Bob a buzz. How about that? Mark Henry, author of In Fact, An Optimist's Guide to Ireland. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make Defacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25 milliliter bottle of Defacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DefactoShave.com.
We love hearing from Team GBS, and we have very regular chats with team members on our LinkedIn page where anyone at all can read about what's going on, what's coming up on the podcast. And if you would like your business to feature on what we say is Ireland's best business podcast, use the LinkedIn page to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you, as I say.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
My next guest says that she's not fragile like a flower, but fragile like a bomb. I love that. She's also a radio and podcast host of the Entrepreneur Like You show. And her recent chat with Fairy Doors founder Aoife Lawler, a woman I know, is a must listen if you want to hear a real rags, and hopefully future riches story, all told, warts and all. Dr. Lottie, and that is what she goes by, Mansi, is also program director at the UCD Innovation Academy. And according to her social media posts about That Great Business Show, she is here to delve into why female entrepreneurs are so underrepresented in Ireland. Dr. Mansi, did I call that?
Lolly's fine, thanks.
No, we're very formal here. Dr. Mansi, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks a million, lovely to be here.
underrepresented in Ireland, female entrepreneurs. Now, we, as you possibly know, have our aim, and we have succeeded, over-exceeded our aim of having gender balance, full gender balance on the show.
Great.
We've managed it.
A full 51%.
52, 53% at this stage.
Marvellous.
So we did it.
Yeah.
We tried. We work. You can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's this underrepresentation about?
There are only 20% of female entrepreneurs in Ireland. And in fact, I would love to get to a point where we just don't say the word female entrepreneur and
Yay,
we just say entrepreneur. But while that we are so underrepresented as females in the entrepreneurial field, I think that, it, you know, maybe it's important to say it. But there's a number of reasons, and I would delve into it, firstly, through my work in UCD in the Innovation Academy. We would have a lot of returners to work, and returners are those people that have been out of work for 4 years or more, and they are predominantly 80% female. So part of what I do is try and whip them into a frenzy, upskill them, both digitally and in terms of confidence, and then get them to try on the entrepreneurial mindset, because actually, these women are highly skilled, highly qualified, just maybe they've been a little bit out of the loop for a while, yet middle management and senior management are crying out for more women, you know, to address their gender balance. So that's part of what I do. And the rest of the thing I do, I suppose, is work on why there are not so many role models visible. And that's part of the rationale for my radio show and my podcast is an entrepreneur like you, meaning anyone can give it a go. It just takes combination of luck, skill, ideas, and then perhaps working through something like the design thinking process or something like that that we teach in UCD.
I thought you were going to say you're working through 24/7s. Because that is what an entrepreneur does, and you know that.
Oh, listen, I'm aiming for a four-day work week, and I'm getting close. I'm getting close, yeah.
So you're opting out of entrepreneurship, so?
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. I'm just making it work for me. I think ultimately, we don't really ever take stock to design our lives, and why would you start businesses in order to work 7 days a week? I would speak to plenty of entrepreneurs in the early stages, first year and second year, they're 9 till 9. As an entrepreneur this morning told me, James Fahey from justtip.ie, he's 20 years old, and I said to him, what are you working? And he said, only 6.5 days a week. But that is normal in the first couple of years. But I think when you get a little bit more established, you want to, do you work to live or do you live to work? And entrepreneurialism hasn't got to be scaling it to global status. It has just to be, you know, creating a business or a series of businesses that can work for you. There's nothing more exciting than the alchemic process of taking an idea and turning it into something that produces both revenue and happiness.
Just in the last 2 minutes, I think I've got so far three questions that I have to get out and just ask you.
Fire away.
The first one is, why do women lack that confidence? You were talking about the 80% of them that pitch up your place at the UCD Entrepreneurs Academy.
Innovation Academy. Yeah.
So I want to ask you, that's four questions. I need to ask you about that one as well. I've come across this frequently is when you have been out of the workplace that you can't see yourself back in there. A man, do you ever hear of a man saying, I couldn't do that? N-O.
Well, no, I beg to differ. Imposter syndrome is what you're talking about. And imposter syndrome actually affects everybody. It's 100% of people. There's nobody that doesn't have it, not from the, you know, the most qualified to the least qualified. And what that is...
Now, I don't agree with you because you're talking to somebody who has never had imposter syndrome.
All right, you're the 1%.
No, I don't get it. I just look at myself and take myself as I am. I am not going to be the world's greatest footballer or anything like that. I just do what I do.
But you found a niche and you found that you're doing something that you love. Mm-hmm. And it's getting to that point that's the goal for us. I think it's taking that first step. Everyone that comes, so I teach on the Springboard course, so it's government funded. It's the postgrad cert in creativity, innovation, entrepreneurship. And what that does is the government are funding us to help people who are pivoting. A lot of them are from COVID. I mean, I've a pilot at the moment, a 747 pilot who 25 years as a pilot, and because of COVID is now having to rethink his entire life and his existence, but his identity is gone, or so he believes. So his identity is, hi, I'm X name and I am a pilot, but now I'm just a name. And so what we do is we have a look at all the skill sets that you've got. So I don't know if you've heard of the squiggle career, but the squiggle career is something that's really coming to the fore now, especially because of COVID. And what that is that people are less and less inclined to have a linear path through their job. You know, they don't go into college and I'm going to be a doctor, lawyer, whatever. They, I mean, there's still those people that do, but the majority of us are actually finding our way and adapting our skill sets, and fantastically. So that's what the workforce of the future is looking at, both digitally and non-digitally. So the workforce of the future, which is only, I'm talking 5 to 10 years away, is looking for resilience, problem solving, critical thinking, data visualization skills. And we're hearing this more and more from large companies to say, can you design courses to help people come to us with a previous level of experience, so they can, especially, you know, middle to senior management level, which is the cohort that we train with and we help with. And then can you help them adapt into the way that we're now working, which is changing so fast that, you know, the ground is moving beneath everyone's feet. 65% of the people at college at the moment are going into jobs that don't yet exist. So we're now coming to an absolute impasse, whereas these skills are more important than ever. And that's my people. They're my cohort. They're amazing. You know, I just have to help them get the confidence to move forward. And that's not imposter syndrome, but imposter syndrome is really actually useful to a certain point, because it can help you move into the fear. And then after a point, it can, you know, if it gets too overwhelming, it can actually help you move away. But my ultimate theory on all of this is that actually imposter syndrome is not the problem. It's the structure of the way that we work that is the problem. And I think, so if you were looking at, I have a couple of words written down here so I didn't forget them. Why are we underrepresented as women? Well, predominantly, it's a multifaceted, complex, and interlinked issue. There's no one solution. There's loads of reasons for it. And there, you know, and there's a number of different solutions, one of which is go meet people and speak to people that have walked the walk. And that's where we need more female mentors, and we need more role models. If you say to students coming into any class, name two or three entrepreneurs, they always go for, you know, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, you know, no one ever says Beyonce, or, you know, no one ever says Cindy Gallup, or no one ever says she's a leader in sex tech. You know, no one ever says, you know, these phenomenal people, because they're under the radar. Yet, as you have shown on your show, 52 to 53% of female entrepreneurs, and I'm exactly the same. I work with on my show with a different balance. I have 80% female entrepreneurs and 20% male, just because I like to flip things around a little bit. But why are we trying to fit in into a system that is already archaic? Why don't we just redefine that system to say, I can be authentically myself. I can wear what I want to wear. I can bring my everything to the table. You know, I have kids. Do you remember that video where he was on the Sky News and his kid wife was on her hands and knees, and we all laughed. Oh, how amazing. That's all of us now. Yeah. We're all in that situation now. We're all Zoom and having trouble with like melding our public-private lives. So let's just bring it all out.
I love when parents bring their kids into studio with me. I've done it here.
Fantastic.
And previously. So I just think, yeah, it's normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's a few burgles and girls, I don't hear a rant at all. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Next question, which is the question of the second of the four that I was thinking about, was, I obviously go out and I chat to women entrepreneurs and I say, come on to the show, and they say, love to. And then suddenly they get cold feet. Now, what is that about? For example, and I will not name the person, but she is a woman. It was her extraordinary job that I wanted to highlight. And she says, oh, and my boss would be much better talking. And I'm thinking, I'm not interested in your boss. I'm interested in you and what you do for a living.
I think it's that we don't hear enough from people's actual authentic life stories of what they've gone through to be able to identify with. So people may think nobody wants to hear from me. But actually, the more, and you can tell this from, you know, the interview I did with Aoife that you mentioned, the more we realize that it's, you know, I call them the peaks of enlightenment and the troughs of disillusionment. More we realize that life is messy and complicated, and we've nothing to hide, we've nothing to be ashamed of. And in fact, if you look at Americans, right, you've got this culture in America of entrepreneurialism, you're nobody until you've had at least one or two failed businesses. Here, people carry shame. I don't know if it's kind of Garland guilt or what it is, but it's like, oh, something didn't work. And you and I both know that any failure is just a learning experience. So I talk about what's failed in my businesses, and I'm very overt about it with my students, because I say, listen, you know, if you can't identify with me and trust me to bring you through this process, there's no point to all this. And so I think it's that. I mean, I can't speak for each individual person of maybe she had her own reasons, but also people don't like speaking.
It's not individual. I'm finding, not very frequently, I still say to you, a man, like they'd climb over hot coals to get into the studio. Mm. Women are reluctant. And that does not make my...
Well, I can give you a whole list of women that will come on.
But people do. Paula Fitzsimons, who's on today's podcast,
yeah,
has done so for me as well. But even they find that people say, oh yeah, I'll get Mary on. And then I get to Mary and Mary suddenly changes her mind. You know, it's not the end of the world, but it's just something that I would love if it was addressed, because that people, women, put up their hands and say, yeah, I'll talk. Because there's no problem talking. I mean, good God. It's the same experience. And going back to Aoife Lawler, what a story.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
Then did I hear from that your podcast with her? Are you writing a book with her?
Yeah, we're writing a book based on stories of I suppose, resilience, really. I mean, it's going to be called Shut Up, Susan, which she came up with. Susan's the name she gives her imposter syndrome that sits on her shoulder. And Susan's quite loud, and she'll tell you this herself. And she explained in the interview about Susan. And I just said to her, well, you're a creative and you animate toys. Why didn't we make a Susan? I was half joking. And then she went, that's a great idea. And so I was like, I'd actually like a little Susan on my shoulder just for those days where I'm like, do you know what? I don't need any, you know, I don't need my brain to tell me that this isn't going to work out. I need to just give it a go. Now, I don't suffer particularly from imposter syndrome, but there's moments in my life, of course, of doubt, of course.
And Sinead, she started chatting to Sinead on an airplane.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that story.
Susan,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, she did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I feel sorry for anyone called Susan, a bit like all those people called Karen. It's difficult, but she had to give it a name. So, yeah. Imposter syndrome is both a good thing and not a good thing. But I think actually we should be questioning the system that exists that make us feel like imposters. That's what I think.
You may question it. What can you do about it?
Well, we can change. We can redefine the way that we're working. I mean, you know, we've redefined that to some extent, although the old M50 seems to be gridlocked again, unfortunately, after 4 o'clock. So I don't know who, you know, not everybody is working remotely. But I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with sort of saying, this is what I need and this is what will work for me. There's a number of Irish companies at the moment trialing the 4-day work week, but it's no good if those 4 days are 9 o'clock to 9 o'clock. You know, that's just the same. So we need to work differently and we need to have much more discussion around what's going to work and why we're working and in what capacity. I think the old day of the 5-day work week and the same day, you know, the same, I'd like to see the school system change, because for goodness sake, you know, a 9 o'clock drop off and a 2 o'clock pickup. I mean, who works half a day these days? That was from old Catholic Ireland where women were mainly staying at home. And here's another particular bugbear of mine. Mainly professional women at the school gates and not so many fathers. So, where, you know, that discussion happens obviously privately in families, but those women should be redefining how they work and being able to work if they want to work. The school system should accommodate that.
Did you ever question the summer holidays? You know what they were created for, summer holidays in Ireland?
No, sitting in the rain?
No, it was so that kids could help out on the farms with the harvest.
Of course.
There's no real reason that kids are given 3 months off in the middle of summer.
Well, look at the Nordic countries. I mean, they do education so well. They don't have uniforms. They start at 10 o'clock in the morning. They don't have homework after school. And yet they're some of the highest rating kids in terms of continuous assessment. You know, our whole education system needs enormous reform.
When you listen back to Mark Henry and read Mark Henry's book, you'll see we're doing okay on the old education side as well.
Yeah.
Given all, you know, there's different strokes
for
different
folks. But we can do better.
Your pals, your colleagues at the UCD Innovation Academy will kill you unless you give an excellent definition of what you're doing and why people should look you up and apply and get involved.
Yeah, we transform lives. I mean, we help people change. I mean, it's as easy as that, really. We use innovation and technology and creativity and sustainability to help upskill people, but also to help empower them. A lot of people are involved in the education sector, for example, but we work with people right from corporates all the way through to educators and then people pivoting that I would have mature students, undergraduates. So enormous number of programs. We're innovating ourselves all of the time in terms of what those programs should look like. We were very successful in our pivot online, which was instantaneous like everyone else, you know. So we were able to, I think one of the things that we have is an amazing agile mindset. We're able to move very quickly as innovators, you know, because we don't sort of constrained.
Now this weed that you're talking about, are you talking about the Innovation Academy?
The Innovation Academy, yeah. We managed to adapt very quickly to new things and new ideas, you know. So we would be looking now into next year and the year after, saying, okay, what does industry need? And we do this amazing thing called customer discovery, where we ask industry, what do you need from the workforce? Then we create courses based on that need. And then we go to the government and say, you know, will you fund this based on what we know and what's coming down the line? And we're able to do that in a fairly quick way, you know, whereas a lot of other educational institutions perhaps take years to develop courses, but we would be very much on the cutting edge.
And are you bringing it outside of Dublin or outside of the environs of UCD?
Well, that's what remote is so amazing for. So my students are all over the world.
Are they?
Yeah,
are they
I've
really?
Got one guy in Syria at the minute serving in the army, and the army let him log on for his classes.
That's a brilliant
Isn't
story.
Isn't it amazing?
I love that.
Yeah.
So if somebody, now you mentioned Springboard, but are there other courses? If somebody wants to get involved, what would she or he want to be doing? Or
yeah, just search Innovation Academy.
No, but what would they, why would they bother?
Well, I think they would bother because a lot of people are finding that there's a liminal space between what they were doing and what they want to be doing, or what the workforce is looking for. I mean, it's changing so fast in terms of digital upskilling, in terms of the cross-cutting issues, and we call them, you know, resilience and sort of transversal skills. But really what we're talking about is solving complex problems, learning how to work in teams. I mean, none of the companies that I'm talking to are looking for generalists anymore. They're looking for you to be able to innovate within a position and to work on teams to do that. And we do that incredibly well. So we do a lot of peer-to-peer learning, but we teach in an emergent way. And that's why I love it.
And if somebody's been out of the workforce for 6, 8, 10 years,
yeah,
he, she wants to upskill, no problems?
No problems at all.
Okay,
no.
Knock on the door. And then if they say, well, you mentioned digital upskilling, how long will that take? 6 months, 6 years?
Yeah, 6 months. I mean, it's okay. Usually 2 mornings a week over 6 months, but obviously each of the courses is different. And then you would have certain things to do. But can I tell you one of my favorite stories?
You may tell me many
so
stories.
So I had this amazing Italian guy, and he was 61 when he came into class. And he said, I'm only here, I'll be completely honest, I'm only here to get out under the feet of my wife.
Okay.
So, and he said, but I have always been involved in innovation. I'm an inventor and I have a garden shed and I just make stuff, but I'm also an engineer. So, you know, he had a practical career in that. I said to him, what is your dream job? And he said, oh God, imagine working for someone like Dyson. So by the end of the 6 months, 2 mornings a week, we'd made a video, a CV for him based on like a, you know, a call out, basically like a 30-second explainer video of this is who I am. And so I said to him, I dare you to send it to Dyson. And he said, no, not at all. And I said, you're doing it. So as part of his course requirement, he'd sent it off to Dyson. And lo and behold, the university that Dyson have, which is an engineer's university in the UK, offered him a position to go and work over there. He moved his whole family over at the age of 62 the next year over to the UK to be part of Dyson.
Love that story. Sorry, yeah, to lose them. We should be holding on to those.
It's the
kind
world's
of
gain because he's doing creative stuff.
But we love keeping the brains back home here. Of course we do.
Yeah, no, of course.
Entrepreneurs will create work and do interesting things.
Do you know,
and
the numbers
like
actually are incredible. If you look at the older generations in terms of anyone sort of over 50, so 50 plus, right? I'm 52, so I'm happy to talk about myself as older. So 50 plus, what you actually get is each decade that you have, you actually increase your possibility of your business surviving. So by the time that you get up to the middle to late 60s, you've actually got a 60 to 70% chance of your business working based on your whole life experience. If you're going in at 20, you have a 20% chance. That's what the research shows. So isn't that phenomenal that the older you are, the more successful your business could be?
It's a lovely piece of information.
We should have more older entrepreneurs. That's another thing we should have, females.
Well, you see, unlike you, I don't really care. We've had a 15-year-old entrepreneur on. Obviously, we're 50-50 gender balance. I just love entrepreneurs.
Me too.
I don't look at gender or anything else. I just want to hear the stories.
We are the wizards. We are the modern day wizards. And you know why? Because we take an idea out of the universe, out of the sky, and we make it happen. That's magic.
Your final question.
Yes.
Dr. Lolly, which is actually short for Lorraine.
Only my mother calls me that when she's annoyed.
Lorraine! Dr. Lolly Mansi, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, I would definitely hire Cindy Gallup. And Cindy Gallup is an amazing woman. She's English, but she lives in New York. And she's involved in, she was in advertising. She's an absolute ball buster. I love her because what she does is she says, let's move the system, not let's move us to accommodate the system. And I like that very much. So she's very much about VC funding for women. There's only 3% of companies are VC funded that actually get funded in the States by female founded companies, which is ridiculous. ridiculous, you know. So she's very much about the larger end of things in terms of large scale funding. But I mean, I've an amazing, there's so many. I don't know how I want to just pick one. There's another incredible woman, Ruth Bailey. She's from Vigo Health. She's Irish. This is a fourth blue chip company, you know, and she's created an incredible thing whereby, you know, if you go to the doctor and you have to wait for an appointment, now she's got a beautiful new company where your doctor will contact you by WhatsApp and you just upload what's the problem. And listen, let's just make things streamlined and easier for each other. So she's in health tech. There is just so many amazing.
Keep firing them up. I love them. I hadn't heard of
Loretta
Bailey,
Dignam is another one. She's working on transforming the world of menopause at the moment.
We know Loretta actually,
Yeah, she's absolutely incredible. Of course, there's Aoife Lawler. I mean, there's so many people coming through at the moment,
and
redefining how they do it.
And you're going to send them over to me.
I will. Your future people to interview.
And you're also going to give them a warning. If they don't, they will fail their academy. They won't get that little cert from UCD.
No student coming from my course is going to be embarrassed to talk to you, or they'll be fully firing up on all cylinders.
Oh, I love it. And we want to hear from them, as we want to hear from people outside the system as well. We just love hearing from entrepreneurs and their views on life, love, and beyond. That is Dr. Lolly Mansi, who is, as I mentioned, a podcaster with an entrepreneur like you, because I heard it on Spotify. You can also hear it here in Dublin South FM every...
It's the first Wednesday of every month and repeated on the Saturday. But Spotify or any way you get your podcast, I will be.
And well worth a listen, particularly because I just happen to know her and like her very much, Aoife Lawler of the Fairy Doors Company, and just how tough it can bloody well be. And, you know, when you had it all and then maybe you don't have it all, and et cetera. Man, Lolly, I was going to call you Mansi. Lolly, thank you so much for joining us That Great Business Show.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Rate and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Make one small switch. Switching from shaving foam to all-natural de facto shaving oil will give you the smoothest, softest shave ever. Switching from shaving oil to de facto helps stop 20 million non-recyclable shaving foam cans go to landfills every year. Switching from shaving oil to de facto will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
I was talking to a well-known and regular listener to the podcast just the other day who was reminiscing about someone who gave his business a financial dig out, I think he said 23 years ago, and 23 years later, he still hasn't forgotten his benefactor's generosity. Now, we are only 63 episodes old, but there are a handful of people who have been unbelievably generous with their time in helping us from what was a standing start. I've name-checked Paula Fitzsimons umpteen times on the show because she keeps lining up great women business leaders for us to ensure we stick to our stated aim of having real gender balance across the show. When she's not being an unpaid recruitment sergeant for That Great Business Show, Paula Fitzsimons has a real job. She is a national director for the Going for Growth program, which is a six-month part-time programme supported by Enterprise Ireland and KPMG that assists ambitious female entrepreneurs to achieve their growth aspirations. Paula Fitzsimons, super supporter, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, and I'm delighted to be here, having listened to most of your previous programmes.
Most? You should have listened to them all.
Well.
You must have missed some of the accolades we have given you over that time.
Well, I don't know. But you're very kind, and thank you for that lovely, warm introduction. And I would just add to it, in a sense, because I don't just manage and direct Going for Growth. I actually designed and developed it. And that, I think, is an important point, because what we were trying to do 14 years ago, when Going for Growth first came about, was we were aware that there were less women than men who had started businesses. It was probably two men for every one woman who was setting up a business. But when we looked at the number of women that were on the media, that were in your newspapers that could be name-checked as entrepreneurs. There were very few of them. And yet we knew at the time that 800 women every month were setting up a new business.
That's a lot.
So where were they? It was a lot. And it's still 800 to 1,000, right? Every month.
Women. Fantastic. Love it.
Okay. So the question is, where were they at that stage? We're looking 2007. Now we're way back, okay? And they weren't visible. So I do research every year called the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, which is backed by Enterprise Ireland. And I do it with a co-author called Professor Colm O'Moran. Oh, sorry, I'm taking your name there. Colm O'Gorman. And I said to Colm, do you know, I think it might be that it's to do with aspiration for growth. And we ask a question in the GEM Adult Population Survey. How many do you expect to employ? And we use it as a proxy for growth. Back in 2007, there were approximately 9 men for every 1 woman who expected to employ 10 or more. That's where the real gap was. So the main gap wasn't about the number starting, but what did they do with the start and their aspiration for growth. And it was against that background and that context that Going for Growth was established.
And now, as you say, you are on your 14th year and you are recruiting again. You are looking for applicants. Tell me who, what are you looking for?
Well, we're looking for women entrepreneurs in any sector across Ireland who's focused on growth.
26 counties or 32?
26 counties, okay. And we're very much looking for someone who's an aspiration for growth. They could be, you know, not really achieving it. They could be at a stalemate in where they are at the moment and they need to accelerate that growth. Or they may be growing already and want to further accelerate it. By and large, they'll be established companies and they'll be the owner-manager. They don't have to have 100% of the shareholding, but they should have a significant part and be a key influencer in the business. And they come from the length and breadth of the country and in a variety of sectors. Now, we will look at those who are at an earlier stage. If they have some revenue and they're highly ambitious, innovative, and plan to grow in export markets, and we'll call them starting strong. And we'll group them at a separate group of roundtables. But we recruit the two at the one time.
And what do they get, the people who manage to get over the hurdle? Because I wonder, a couple of people have come in here and wanted, because they love, people love your program. It is obviously top, top, top notch. And they wanted to know what are the secrets to get chosen. But we'll get onto that in a second. So what is the, my first question, which I've already forgotten.
What does the program consist of?
Please, thank you. Okay. Thank you for reminding me.
So it's run over 6 months. So it'll start in January, at the end of January. And we'll have a launch event followed by the first round table. And there's round tables which take place once a month for the following 6 months. So there's a beginning, a middle and an end. And that's important because that allows us to evaluate and to measure the progress made by the participants over that 6 month period. And they only meet once a month for about 3 hours. And they meet with a group of peers. So there'll be about 8 on the round table with what we call a lead entrepreneur. And a lead entrepreneur is a volunteer who's a successful entrepreneur herself, who's giving her time back. And going back to your introduction at the beginning of the programme, you talked about somebody, the virtuous circle. You talked about giving back and benefactors. And in many respects, our lead entrepreneurs believe in this philosophy of giving back.
And you have brilliant ones that we've had on the programme. I think Bridget Donoghue is one of them. Fidelma McGurk of Payslip is another. These people, I love them because, again, a lot of people who are not in business think that business is all about beating up the other guy. But it's not. It's actually, if you're not eating, I keep saying it, if you're not eating my lunch, I'll help. We like each other in a funny way.
Yeah, well, certainly we would never put competitors on the same table. And there is very much a culture of collaboration, support, confidentiality and respect. And respect is important because we never would take the route of cutting you down at your knees. It's much more about nurturing and helping you to fulfill your potential, whatever that potential is. And that potential is defined by yourself. So, for example, in your first meeting, your first round table, you'll be asked to set down your goals and milestones. In the light of your expectation of what's possible in the next 3 years. So 3 years, only 36 months. So if we're looking at 6 months, what do you need to achieve over that 6 months to help you along the road to your 36-month goals, your three-year goals? And these aren't your partners, your bank manager, your development agency. They're not their goals, they're your goals. And you set them down for yourself and you commit to them. And then you check in with your group every month with regard to your progress towards those goals. And I tell you, you will have seen accelerated achievement of those over the 6 months.
And I have heard that it is highly collegiate, is that they do actually get on the phone to each other a hell of a lot more than just once a month.
This is absolutely true. And they have WhatsApp group and all the rest of it. We just ask the lead entrepreneur for a commitment of a couple of hours once a month. They see each other as their sounding board. And in good times and bad, they're there for each other. An important aspect, I think, is that it reduces the psychological isolation. Anyone starting a business, when that great business show started, you know, it was starting with just yourself.
And Jamie Heaslip at the time.
And Jamie Heaslip. But it's a lonely place. And the great thing about the round table is that you meet others who are in that similar space. And many people have said, we have found our tribe. Because it's quite difficult, not only to find female entrepreneurs, but there are now more of them and they have a higher profile, but also to find women who want to grow their businesses. These are harder to find. And suddenly, they're with you around the table. There's no competitors there and they're all wishing for you to succeed.
And the question that I am, and that I mentioned before, that I'm asked frequently, what are you looking for at the application stage that differentiates people enough to get them onto the program? I presume, I don't know how many applications you get, but I presume you get more applications than there are seats around the table.
Sure, we get about 5 applications for every seat around the table. Now, that's not to discourage anyone from applying, because if you don't apply, your name isn't, as it were, in the hat. The lead entrepreneurs select among the applicants. And what are they looking for? Let's look at the application form, first of all, to understand what's in it, because it's very straightforward. And we don't interview and you don't do a pitch. You're going to go in your application form. So we're going to ask you, where are you now in terms of your sales, your employment and your customer orientation in terms of domestic or overseas? And we just want to know where you are. That's your starting point. We want to know where you'll be in 3 years' time. Again, we want to see that arrow going up. That's all things being good. Who could have seen COVID coming from left field? But, you know, in an ideal world, where do you want to be? So we want to see ambition there. And then we're saying to people, what's your barrier? You know, what are the 3 things that you feel will stop you achieving those ambitions? Then we're saying, how can we help? And then we're saying, what will success look like to you after the 6-month program, right? We're asking them for 500 words about themselves and even less, 250, about why they became an entrepreneur. And it's on that basis that the lead entrepreneurs will consider the applications in front of them.
Do you see patterns emerging, for example, on the barriers and on the aims that people have? Are there similarities across the board?
Okay, so let's take first one first in terms of the barriers. Absolutely. It will depend if we're looking at the group which are starting strong or if we're looking at the going for growth group. If we're looking at the starting strong group, it's all about financing. So they're always trying to get money. That's their number one. The number one for the going for growth group is much more around people. Okay, it's more people issues. So that's that one. In terms of ambition, we are seeing that those applying in more recent years are more ambitious. I think that's because lots of different influences have brought about a change almost in the ether to give people permission to be ambitious. So we're seeing...
Are you seeing that? Are you?
We are seeing
it. Love that.
And I'll tell you now, so let's, can we put that down in a concrete fact? Yes, we can. So do you remember I said to you at the outset that going back to when we started Going for Growth, there were 9 men for every 1 woman who felt that they would employ 10 or more after 5 years, I think it was, right? Now, Professor O'Gorman, who's sitting on my left shoulder, would say, now, Paula, you have to average that over 3 years. And if we average it over 3 years, it's 7.5. Okay, but you could take it in 2007, it was 9. But anyway, 7.5. But in the 2019 GEM report, we could say that that number was down to 3.5. So there were 3.5 men for every woman who felt that they, you know, had an aspiration for growth. That is an enormous achievement.
That's some change.
It's some change. And we're seeing it in terms of the numbers coming forward who are stepping forward and saying, we want to go for growth. And the growth that they feel is possible is accelerating all the time. But the fact, you know, it's very important to get people into a certain frame of mind. And in our instance, a growth frame of mind. So every one of those people who apply, even if they never get on, it helps them to get into a growth frame of mind because they've got to think, where am I now? Where could I possibly be? And I would often say to someone, just go for a walk, you know, go away from the computer, go for a walk wherever you like to walk and just think. And then I'd say to them, do you know, imagine that you're doing an interview in 3 years' time with your good self on the Great Business Show. And
well remembered.
And you're being asked, what have you achieved? What are you going to say? And what you're going to say then is your goal. And let's work towards it.
And we have had, as you know, people from Going for Growth on the programme, and they said it is simply transformative. Like, they're almost evangelical about it. There is cleaning services. I mean, she says, Emma, she says you just changed your life. Mm. And what a lovely thing to be able to say.
I mean, Chupi would also say we changed her life. Chupi had 8 people employed in 2014 when she came on Going for Growth. She's 64, 65 at the moment and flying.
Fantastic.
And will employ more. I think that you ignite something that's there already. So one of the things that I feel strongly about is that the word entrepreneur, it's a noun, but it shouldn't be. So an entrepreneur isn't a badge that you get at one time and lasts forever. It should be an adjective or an adverb. It's about a way of behaving. So looking for opportunity, gathering resources and implementing on a constant basis. And what we endeavour to do is to reignite the entrepreneur or the entrepreneurial behaviour within the individual. And once that's sort of light goes off in their head, then they can see the possibilities.
Maybe this is a question that you either don't want to answer, maybe you won't answer, is that kids, are we teaching them properly in school to think entrepreneurially? I'm not thinking about lovely programs that where they're, you know, young entrepreneur of the year or whatever it is, just to think about. I still remember to this day, the first piece of entrepreneurship I did was I went out and I made popcorn and I sold it on the street. And I got money for it. And I like that very much. Just ideas like that for kids. Not just about the money. It's just about doing an activity and succeeding.
It is about doing an activity and succeeding. And I suppose in some ways you can't start early enough. But if you take me as a case in point, I mean, the word entrepreneur didn't exist when I was young. I never thought of being an entrepreneur. When I left college, I became a civil servant. So in many ways, I'm an atypical, I suppose, entrepreneurial type. But when I look back and I think about the opportunities that I didn't recognise as opportunities, when I gave extra classes, they weren't even called grinds in those days, when I gave extra classes many, many years ago, long before Leeson Street was set up, I saw the potential of focusing on individuals and helping them achieve their potential. Did I think of setting up Leeson Street? I did not. I didn't, you know, I used to hold my transistor, as it was called, tranny in those days, up to my ear while cycling. Very dangerous. But did I think of inventing, you know, earphones? Well, not that I'd know how to, but I didn't even think about
it. That's exactly the difference, isn't it? Yeah.
So I think what's most important is to actually encourage the antennae, the entrepreneurial antennae in people, at whatever age so that they begin to recognise opportunity, recognise and look for opportunity and recognise it when they see it.
I'd love to see that happen. And maybe we will. Come here to me. Before I let you go, I've got two questions. First of all, what must people who want to apply do and when and etc.?
Okay. Now, they must go on the website, goingforgrowth.com, and they register their interest. We'll send them out immediately a link to the application form, very straightforward application form, as I've explained. And they will get that back and returned, completed before the 16th of December. There's no give on that. They must get it in by that date. Now, thanks to Enterprise Ireland and KPMG, there is no cost to those who become involved. It's really a superb opportunity for the right person.
And the second question is, who would Paula Fitzsimons hire in a heartbeat? You're looking at me. I hope you know you saw this. You did read that, didn't you? Too frequently, people say, oh, yeah, I never saw that. You did read it. Thank you. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
My lead entrepreneurs. My lead entrepreneurs have a special characteristic within them. They volunteer, they're prepared to give back, they have been successful, and they're generous of their spirit.
Which is your favourite?
I don't have a favourite. I love them all. Because
each of them have
a characteristic.
I have to have just one name. I've gone through this with other people and I sit here until I break them.
You won't be breaking me. I mean, if I had magic dust, I would take the best of each of them and create a superhuman. But I don't need to. Because I knew you were going to ask this question, and I couldn't say that I would favour one over the other. In the same way as I wouldn't have awards for my participants, because everyone who fulfills their potential, in my regard, is a winner.
And we all agree. Paula Fitzsimons, thank you so much for, and not just for coming along today, but literally for everything that you've done for us to date. Please continue and send us those brilliant, brilliant women entrepreneurs. And thanks for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 63. My thanks, as always, to the ever-optimistic team here at the Dublin Podcast Studios. Brian, getting better all the time, Begley, was today's studio engineer. And Peter, reasons to be cheerful, Rice, will add some pour on positivity later on, making us easily the best-sounding podcast on the planet. Team GBS wants to make many more podcasts. So if your company wants the best podcast production team available, do give us a shout. You will find us on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. We also want your ads. Wise organizations like Big Red Cloud, ISME, Udrost na Gerdochte, all know that The Great Business Show is the way to talk to Ireland's SMEs. So talk to us about our competitive rates. And finally, my thanks to our sponsor, defactoshave.com. The world's best shaving oil. Try it for just a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So from me, Conal O'Moran, until the next time, Slán tamall.